Aye.
The United States Court of International Trade is now in session. The Honorable Gary S. Katzman presiding before Court Number 22-0024. Good Luck India Limited versus the United States et al. Will the attorneys please state their names for the record, starting with the plaintiff?
Jordan Kahn for Glenfeld Desiderio, representing plaintiff, and with me is Ned Marchand.
Morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. Good morning, Monitor for the Department of Justice, and with me is Ayaz Jay for the Department of Commerce.
Morning.
Al Over, Kelly Dry for the defendant interviewers.
Morning. May you be seated? So I understand that Mr. Goel has discussed the allocation of time for the argument, and court, of course, has read the filings and responses to the oral argument questions that were sent to the parties on July 17th, 2023. Without further ado, we will begin the argument.
May it please the court. Good morning.
Good morning.
Your Honor, Jordan Kahn again, Glenfeld Desiderio, representing Plaintiff Good Luck India Limited. We're challenging the Department of Commerce's December 29th notice that decreed Good Luck's AR3 entries must liquidate at 33.7% ADD in violation of department precedent, due process, and applicable regulations. And it also arbitrarily set the cash deposit effective rate. We appreciate the opportunity to present our case and especially to respond to this court's questions that allowed us to delve into researching agency precedent as to provisional revocations. So I'll start with that issue. The defendant and petitioner only discussed Xanthan Gum and Ball Bearings, but we found 10 other cases. This is on the chart on page 2 of our responses. They both
I might say I'm very interested in what you've put together. And of course, we'll be very interested to hear the response by the government and the defense intervener with respect to that chart.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Your Honor. We worked hard on that research. You know, they emphasize that Commerce and AR3 didn't use the ball bearings language, quote, will not initiate any new administrative reviews. But as that chart shows, in all cases, since the first one in 1994, besides AR3, Commerce used this language, including twice after AR3. This language was used whether the provisional revocation was partial or full. Together, these cases constitute an agency practice that Commerce does not initiate any new ARs during provisional revocation, whether for an entire order or a particular respondent. Our research shows this is not a case of dueling Federal Register notice language between Xanthan Gum and AR3. Of the 10 provisional partial revocations, 9 used the, quote, will not initiate any new ARs language. So Commerce and AR3 cannot avoid Commerce's clear practice to not initiate on provisionally revoked respondents. Indeed, Commerce's May 27, 2020 Timken notice relied on two cases in the chart, cylinders and drill pipe, that used the language. That's on note 13 of the May 20 Timken notice. Petitioner says that later requests in the case of provisionally suspended investigations only came up before in ball bearings, but we found others, especially the ELFPDs from Japan. that's 1994, where Commerce, as it did in ball bearings, allowed for review requests to be filed post-reinstatement. Now, defendant misconstrues ball bearings by emphasizing the 09 and 10-11 administrative reviews that had been requested before revocation. What is key from ball bearings is the 11-12 and 12-13 reviews whose anniversary months occurred during the provisional revocation period. And Commerce, in ball bearings, as in ELFPDs, it allowed for post-reinstatement review requests. And it should have done so here for good luck in AR3.
How do you respond, Mr. Kahn, to the defendant intervener's argument that, assuming arguendo, that the review option was not available to you because good luck was no longer subject to the order, good luck then had no right to request a review under 19 CFR section 351.2.13b2 in the manner that the regulation was written?
Okay, so the regulation allows for covered entries. So is this what your Honor is asking?
Yes.
So defendant concedes that covered means subject. Okay, so covered means subject, and excluded means not subject, then excluded means not covered. This syllogism confirms that good luck could not have requested AR3 in June of 2021. Commerce used the word repeatedly, that we were excluded, that they had revoked the order to us. We're seeing, they're splitting hairs and using linguistical gymnastics to try to argue that we were somehow still covered, even though we were not subject. And petitioner really shows its hand, because they're arguing that that was unlawful. They're saying that they say that Commerce used unartful language in excluding and revoking, because that's, to us, it's perfectly clear what was happening, that they were being excluded, not covered, but that wasn't unartful. That was deliberate and conformed to agency practice and law. And what petitioner is saying now is that Commerce violated some principle enshrined in the circuit's Diamond Sawblades case by doing that exclusion, but that case is about mandamus to issue an order. It has nothing to do with reviews. It's in opposite to AR3. And in any event, petitioner has not appealed Commerce's exclusion from the May 2020 Timken notice. That conformed to law, but if somehow petitioners are correct, if that was unlawful, we didn't request AR3 in detrimental reliance on Commerce's language. Not only the words excluded and revoked, but on the established agency precedent from the chart.
Now, and I realize I'm jumping around a little bit here, but the May Timken notice, as you've referenced, excluded merchandise produced and exported by good luck from the AD order. The government argues that because good luck's merchandise was still subject to the order, good luck remained covered for the purposes of 19 CFR section 351.213b2, as we've just discussed. How do you respond to, I want to be clear my own mind about your answer to this, that to the defendant intervening's argument that until a conclusive court decision, Commerce had no authority to change good luck's ultimate status as either covered or not covered by the order?
Yeah, it's very important to understand the provisional revocation context. We argue that it's a difference without a distinction for the most part, and that the May 20 Timken notice actually relies on drill pipe, which is a full revocation. So we don't think there should be a difference there, but what's important, Your Honor, is that in the provisional revocation context only, respondents remain subject for merchandise that they have only either exported or produced, but not both. And so petitioner argues, well, there was a notice of opportunity, but that didn't apply to good luck's entries. To be clear, There were no entries that Good Luck only produced or exported. All of Good Luck's entries during AO3 were both, and those were clearly excluded. The fact that somebody could have requested a review on entries that Good Luck exported or produced doesn't mean that there could have been a review request on both, because that was so clear. And we will draw the court's attention to the Xanthan Gum respondent selection memo that we appended to our responses last week, where Commerce was saying somebody asked for Fufeng, they didn't, but that only applied to Xanthan Gum that Fufeng either produced or exported, and not both. They used the word again, excluded. Commerce's practice is to exclude part of what in the partial revocation context to do a full exclusion for respondents with respect to merchandise that they've done both. And that's the situation here.
And one further question, and I know that your hope is to further, to rebut the answers that the government and the defendant intervener have provided, but with respect to this idea of the opportunity to review, the Federal Register notice has a contact name, phone number, and address to contact for further information or clarification. So the question that might be asked is, why didn't Good Luck ask if it was required to submit an AR3 request to preserve its right to review?
Well, again, as we put in our response, in our experience, Commerce very seldom wants to engage in these sorts of issues. We just have not had success, but our not filing was deliberate. We actually agree with Petitioner that there was no need for clarification. Our not filing AR3 was based on its agency practice, its May 20 tinted notice, and it's August 20 AR2 initiation. And if I can talk about that AR2 initiation, because that's very important. This is in footnote 5 of that initiation. They say, quote, Commerce excluded from the ABD order on tubing produced and exported by Good Luck. So it's very important to follow the chronology here, because we are getting harangued for our AR2 request, saying, well, that proves that we should have known. No, it proves the opposite, Your Honor. That does not require us to have requested AR3 a year later, in June of 21, because AR2 request was filed in June 20. That was before Commerce, in August 20, confirmed that it was not conducting AR2, as per Good Luck. And the vast majority of Good Luck's AR2 entries entered at 33.7% before Good Luck was provisionally revoked. Keep in mind, there was 4 days left on AR2 when the provisional revocation published in the Federal Register. So these do not present similar circumstances as Petitioner claims. These are a completely different set of facts. And Petitioner says, well, Commerce didn't reject Good Luck's AR2 request, but Commerce refused to initiate 3 months later, saying Good Luck is excluded. So that was clear to us, coupled with the agency precedent and the May 20 Timken notice. So, you know, just want to be clear that it was, you know, we thought through whether to file, and we deliberately filed. We had no reason to suspect that Commerce would break with its precedent and the law. And lastly, the defendant emphasizes this court's injunctions in Xanthan Gum in the investigation appeal that made their way into the Timken notice. But I want the court to appreciate that there was no injunctions of tubing in the original investigation appeal. We could have requested one at the outset. We didn't. Petitioner could have obtained one when the tides turned. They didn't. So if defendant is correct that court injunctions are required to keep entries subject, that proves that Good Luck's entries were not subject, the AR3. And similarly, petitioner misplaces reliance on Snap-on. There's a case where the rate dropped on appeal, but Snap-on did not participate in the appeal and they didn't get an injunction. Here, so Snap-on couldn't get any refunds. Here, the rate increased on appeal and there was no injunction, so Good Luck likewise can't be liable for the increase. And unlike Snap-on, Good Luck vigorously protected its rights. And I'd like to turn to the due process claim. Our allegation of the due process denial applies to all of our claims, but especially this post-reinstatement AR opportunity. Because if the department is going to contradict its own established practice, its May 2010 notice, and its AR2 initiation, it's required to give parties instruction that they needed to have requested an AR during the provisional revocation. Here, there was a complete failure of Commerce to provide any advance notice or opportunity. The government claims, quote, Commerce provided Good Luck with sufficient notice through the 1221 notice. No. Due process requires advance notice and an opportunity to be heard before agency action. It's not satisfied here, where Commerce decreed the AR3 entries must liquidate at 33.7 and the cash deposit rate must start at September 10, 2021. Using petitioner's language, the Commerce process here was so haphazard or unreasonable so as to be arbitrary or capricious. And the due process denial, in our view, is confirmed by Commerce's trying to take cover under the ministerial regulation. The defendant concedes that these issues aren't ministerial, so why did Commerce analyze them as ministerial errors? And doing so requires a prior opportunity to challenge the DOC action. Where was our opportunity to challenge these actions beforehand?
And again, we've read your papers. What is your home run case?
On due process, last week's Royal Brush, and of course, Your Honor's Tayo decision. Fair warning was not given. Due process was not given. So at a minimum, remand is required for that. In my remaining minutes, I'd like to talk about the liquidation at 0%, which, to be clear, is an alternate argument, right? We're fighting for Commerce to conduct, allow AR3 to be requested and conducted after the fact. But if not, the entries have to liquidate at zero. And our home run is from this court decades ago in Mattel. Mattel used strong language saying, at the time of entry is the rate at the moment of entry. A contrary result, quote, would be absurd due to the regulation's obvious temporality. So the entry rates are not informed by subsequent events. In Mittal, our home run case, it was a changed circumstance review, and here it's a circuit ruling. It's undisputed that Good Luck's AR3 entries entered at zero. So we agree with defendant that the rate should be the rate applicable during the period which those entries were entered, 0%. There's no basis for Commerce to change that to say the cash deposit rate that would have been prevailed. And you know, we don't even agree that that would have prevailed. We were just assigned a 1.39% rate in AR2. If we're going to forget that the provisional revocation ever happened, shouldn't the correct cash deposit be 1.39%? That's why the regulation says moment of entry, to avoid these complications. And petitioner complains about a yo-yo. They want entered at zero to shoot up to 33.7. That's a yo-yo. We want zero to stay zero. And if petitioner is so confident that review requests were required in June 21, it could have requested to avoid liquidation at zero. We don't think that's what they understood. We think it's telling that they requested on Good Luck in 1, 2, and 4, but not 3. And the recently announced very low rates for Good Luck in 1, 2, and 4 underscore the impropriety of the 33.7% rate.
And what is the rate, remind me, for with respect to 4?
Well, it's just preliminary, but it's 0.58, I believe, just above de minimis. And so that was verification was just conducted. And just in my remaining minutes, I'd like to hit briefly on our final issue, which is the cash deposit effective rate. Petitioner concedes there is no explanation for September 10, 21, and argues it should have been August 31, 21. Defendant briefed that it could have been May 27, 20, and they recognize now that AR3 contradicted ball bearings. So it is not lawful for an effective date to be set just because it could have been another date. I mean, that is classic arbitrary agency action. Defendant says Commerce can change it from ball bearings, but it has to provide an explanation, and here there's nothing. Ball bearings correctly used 10 days from final court decision, which was this court entering judgment at the end, after the circuit. Defendant calls the circuit decision in this case, in Good Luck, final, but it was not. Your Honor, it was sent back to this court for other issues. Defendant is wrong to say that parties were on notice on August 31, 2021, that Good Luck would be reinstated. There were other issues that could have potentially affected that outcome, and that's why ball bearings used the effective date as 10 days after CIT judgment. We argue that the better interpretation for effective date would be December 29, 2021, given the whole purpose behind giving Federal Register notice. And this court's decision in Sumac really waxed poetic on the importance of giving notice in a prospective manner. We think that's maybe a double for us. So we were surprised to see Sumac cited by the government and relied on, because we don't see how it helps their case at all. And finally, the petitioner emphasizes that the statute literally governs liquidation and not cash deposits. But they recognize, quote, that the agency has traditionally relied on the date that is 10 days after the final court decision, presumably reliance on 19 U.S.C. 1516E. Indeed, Commerce's May 2010 notice, when setting the cash deposit rate, said it is, quote, acting in accordance with 1516AE. Where Commerce continually transposes a statute, it becomes bound by that provision, and its violation here is not salvaged by petitioner's post hoc statutory interpretation. And this actually applies to all the issues we're arguing, Your Honor. This court must rule on the explanation articulated by Commerce, and not that advanced by counsel on appeal. Here, the agency record is so scant, and the Commerce action so egregious, we submit that remand is necessary. And unless Your Honor has any other questions,
I do have sort of a hypothetical, and this relates to the sort of procedure, and again doesn't suggest that the court has a view of how the case is going to turn out. But I'm going to ask all the parties this question. So, as you know, the standard review instructs to hold unlawful and set aside agency action, findings and conclusions found to be arbitrary, capricious, and abuse of discretion, or otherwise not in accordance with law. Assuming arguendo that Commerce erred in assessing that Good Luck's administrative review requests remain due during the administrative month, that it was provisionally excluded from the order, what is the result? Should this court order Commerce to now give Good Luck an opportunity to request AR3 review, or should this court remand back to Commerce for further explanation of its assessment that Good Luck's administrative review request remain due?
Your Honor, I will cogitate on this, but my initial reaction is that we would like a direct remand ordering Commerce to allow for the submission of AR3 review requests and overseeing a remand, at which time a AR3 would be conducted. I'm involved in another case right now where the CIT is overseeing a new review that's being conducted on remand. That's YC Rubber, another one where this court had been reversed by the Federal Circuit. And we're comfortable with that process because it gives the department the space to conduct the review in the manner it sees fit, but it's the court retains oversight and jurisdiction, and it will of course come back. So I don't think it's any surprise that we will, and we think we could go on record to say we will request AR3, write it down right now and get it to Commerce as counsel. So assuming that
so no further cogitation necessary,
right? I mean, in other words, Your Honor could just skip a step and order the conduct of AR3 to be conducted on remand. We would look forward to working on that the way that we've done successfully in ARs 1 and 2 and 4, but we thus far have been unlawfully deprived of that opportunity in AR3.
And the case that you just referenced, do you have the case number?
YC Rubber 1969. I'll have to look that up.
Right.
Just to be clear.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah.
We'll now hear from a counsel for the government, Ms. Christine Meyer. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Your Honor, and good morning. May I please the court? As our rebuttal to Good Luck's answers to the court's questions will show, Commerce's determination here was not arbitrary or capricious, and Good Luck's arguments really only serve to confuse the issues. Turning to the specific questions, in question one, whether Commerce stated it would not initiate a new administrative order, the language, Good Luck points to that table of examples, but to the and claims that this shows that Commerce has a practice of not including companies into its administrative reviews, but this is simply incorrect. And Good Luck never even answered the question, which is a simple no. Here, Commerce did not state anywhere that it would not initiate any new reviews, and there was nothing prohibiting Good Luck from requesting a review for AR3. Parties are always entitled to request a review. Whether Commerce includes them in a review is a discretionary question, and Commerce may not always include a company in a review, but parties can always request a review unless there is that specific language saying Commerce will not initiate any new review, so there's no point in companies requesting a review. The example that they cite, too, also show that Good Luck in a table included full or partial revocation, but full revocation just means that the entire order was revoked. So in essence, there were no companies that were covered by the order. And so there was no review to, in fact, initiate. And Good Luck makes this argument that exclusion from one review means that a company is excluded from all reviews, but this is simply not the case. Reviews are based on different facts, different periods of time, so it doesn't make sense that if a company is excluded from one review, it's excluded from all. This is the reason why the statute requires that companies request a review, a timely review, if they want to be included.
So just to be clear, with respect to Good Luck's contention that since 1994, Good Luck AR3 is the only case in which Commerce did not expressly state that it would, quote, not initiate any new ARRs during the provisional revocation period, end quote. Your position is that an accurate characterization?
Your Honor, we did not do a thorough search of cases to determine whether there were other cases where that language was not included, but the cases that Good Luck cited, some of them were Timken notices, some of them were notices pursuant to 1516AE, and so it kind of stands, it would be logical that some of the notices that Commerce had issued in some cases would not include that language if Good Luck didn't find them. But even so, just the cases don't demonstrate that Commerce has a practice of excluding. To the extent Commerce has a practice, it would be to include that will not initiate language, and otherwise, if it does not include that language, to allow requests. So the practice is not what Good Luck is claiming. And Good Luck also incorrectly claims that it was excluded from the order, but this is simply not true. The order was revoked only with respect to entries of merchandise both produced and exported by Good Luck. So the order was still in place for all other producers and exporters, and for entries of merchandise produced but not exported, or merchandise exported but not produced by Good Luck. Turning to question 1A, regarding the ball bearings case and whether it's significant that their Commerce provisionally revoked the orders in their entirety, and this is significant because here the orders were only partially revoked. In ball bearings, Commerce revoked all the orders, so essentially there was no order under which the parties could even submit requests for review. Good Luck claims that ball bearings is the same, and we admitted to that, but that's not true. We do not agree that ball bearings is the same. In ball bearings, the party would have needed an entirely new petition because there was simply nothing for them to file under. This is an entirely different situation. Commerce revoked the order only partially with respect to Good Luck. Also, with regards to Xanthan Gum, where there was a part, there was a partial revocation with respect to Su Feng's entries, and only certain of Su Feng's entries. And there, Commerce discontinued reviews, but then when it reinitiated reviews, it reviewed those parties that had requested timely review prior to the discontinuation according to statute. Turning to question 1B, again, asking about Xanthan Gum. As we stated, the answer is no, which Good Luck completely skirts. Commerce did not provide any party a renewed opportunity to request a review outside of the anniversary month. And this is specifically because, according to statute, parties must request a timely review.
So I'm a little unclear on this. You and the defendant intervener, I think, acknowledge that no statute, regulation, or past agency practice clearly establishes that administrative review requests remain during the anniversary month for provisionally excluded companies whose exclusion lasts beyond the anniversary month. So turning to your point you just made, what obligation, if any, does Commerce have to provide notice of the procedures it follows in an anti-dumping procedure?
And I'm sorry, I've been saying per statute, per regulation, 19 CFR 351212, and this is the assessment of duties. According to C1, if the Secretary does not receive a timely request for an administrative review of an order within that anniversary year, then certain actions will apply. Here, Good Luck did not submit that timely request. Because there was no review, then certain actions apply according to that regulation in terms of what duty rate applied to Good Luck during that period.
So, again, I guess I'm unclear. Regarding the notice of procedures, you say that Good Luck submitted a review request for AR2 to preserve its right. But why is it significant that Good Luck may have simply guessed the procedure correctly with respect to AR2? Why should this court hold Good Luck's correct guess in AR2 against it?
Well, it wasn't really a correct guess, Your Honor, because Commerce posts notices every time it's about to initiate an annual review for any covered merchandise. So merchandise imported, exported, present at a specific time from a specific country. And Commerce did the same thing here. This is at 86 Federal Register 41821. Commerce provided that notice for AR1, AR2, AR3, and this notice specifically notifies parties of the opportunity to request a review, and it also has that contact name, phone number, address to contact for further clarification. Good Luck claimed that Commerce does not interact or answer questions of parties, but this is simply not true. Commerce routinely answers questions that parties have, as evidenced by the contact information given. And Good Luck doesn't even claim that it tried to contact Commerce. So it didn't even try to do so and then was rebuffed. It simply forgot, didn't notice, we're not sure. But the point is, it did not follow the statutory and regulatory requirements here. Turning to question 2, whether there are any examples of Commerce giving an individual exporter, producer reinstated, the answer is no, as Good Luck concedes, because Commerce is not permitted by regulation to grant an untimely request, as I stated. And then turning to the definition of covered by, now the vocabulary.com definition that Good Luck provides is absolutely not the meaning that Commerce ascribes to covered by. An exporter or producer is covered by an order when the merchandise they produce or ship is within the scope or subject to an order. Now, we cited to a CIT case, but we can also look to the statutory provision for Commerce's publication of an anti-dumping duty order. This is at 19 U.S.C. 1673 EA2. And it states that an anti-dumping duty order must include a description of the subject merchandise in such detail as the administering authority deems necessary. The Federal Circuit in Consolidated Bearing Company versus United States 348 F3997 cited to the statutory provision when it stated upon entry of merchandise covered by an anti-dumping duty order, an importer must make a cash deposit. So there's no specific definition, but the statute explains that subject to includes a description of that subject merchandise, and then the court, the Federal Circuit, has referred to that description, subject by, when referring to covered by. And the look here is simply conflating terms. It's saying that an exporter or producer cannot be both covered by an order and at the same time excluded from a review. But this is completely incorrect, as every single one, bless you, Honor,
thank you, sorry.
As every single one of the cases that Good Luck points to in response to question one shows, some of the companies in those orders were partially revoked from review, the same way we had here, but they were still subject to the order because they were still importing or producing subject merchandise during that time.
So if the court were to determine that Good Luck was not covered by the order at the time of the AR3 notice to request review, is it your position that Good Luck would not have been allowed under 19 CFR section 351.213b2 to request administrative review of its AR3 entries?
If Good Luck was not covered by the order
at the time of the AR3 notice to request review.
Right. That's correct, but Good Luck was, in fact, covered by the order because they were importing or exporting subject merchandise during the... They were revoked, partially revoked from AR2 because they had... They were not... For AR2, that what they were covered by, there were no entries of it, but if a producer or importer, exporter is bringing that merchandise into the country during the time, they are still covered. So that's a separate question, and that was a question that would have been answered in the underlying determination. So in the underlying court case, when Good Luck initially challenged that 33.7% rate that was applied.
So if I understand you correctly, your position is that individual exporters, producers, have a right to an opportunity to request administrative review of their entries.
Correct.
So why wasn't Good Luck afforded such a right once it was again covered by the order by virtue of the Federal Circuit's reversal?
It was afforded that right. It simply did not request. There's no requirement that Commerce reach out to parties to ask them to submit a request. Commerce publishes the notice, which puts parties on notice, and then parties can submit that request, or petitioners can submit a request on behalf of other parties. And then touching on the question of 19 U.S.C. 1675, and 1516A establishing the liquidation at that 33.7% rate pursuant to final court decision. Now, the specifics of the 33.7 rate were determined in that underlying provision. And I see I'm out of time, Your Honor. May I finish?
Yes, please, yes.
Thank you. The rate was determined in that underlying proceeding. In August 31st, 2021, it was determined that that rate was correct per the Federal Circuit's final and conclusive decision according to 1516AE. At that time, Commerce applied the rate at the time of entry, which was correctly that 33.7% rate. And I do have a couple of other points regarding the August 31st decision. That Federal Circuit decision is conclusive court action. As Timken determined, 1516AE covers conclusive court action when there's no other, nothing else that can happen in that case that would come out to a different outcome. So when the Federal Circuit issued its decision, it did remand the action to this court, but it remanded it in order to enter judgment in accordance with that decision. So at that point, there was no way for any other determination on the rate to be made or any additional appeal to be made. And I can answer the hypothetical you had posed, Your Honor.
Yes, please. Here.
Now, because Good Luck did not file a timely request for review, which is provided by regulation, the court cannot go against that regulation. There's no chance for Good Luck to apply, to request a review. At most, the court could remand to Commerce to explain why Good Luck should have requested a review. But even so, that is explained by regulation and by statute. So there's no need for Commerce to explain anything in addition because it's simply following the statutory and regulatory requirements here. And if there are no further questions, Your Honor, thank you.
All right. Thank you. Now here for counsel for the defendant intervener.
Good morning, Your Honor. So Good Luck is seeking a second bite at the apple to request a review that none of the cases, statutes, or regulations provided. Statutory scheme, as explained by the Federal Circuit in the BMW case, is that under 1675A, Commerce first publishes a notice of opportunity request. There's your due process notice and opportunity request. Parties then file a request that sets the wheels in motion for a notice of initiation by Commerce. They hold the review, and liquidation happens after the review. In Xanthan Gum and Ball Bearings, Commerce said it was not going to initiate and not provide an opportunity to request. The combination did suggest futility, so Commerce had to go back after the case was complete and give them that opportunity. It was Good Luck itself was never denied that opportunity. Commerce published a notice in the anniversary month, didn't say at any time to Good Luck, don't request. It would be useless for you to request. So the missing opportunity to request in Ball Bearings is that critical piece of the Commerce to later give other parties the opportunity to request that Good Luck was not in a position to request.
Why didn't petitioners request a review of Good Luck's entries for AR3? Does this indicate that they shared Good Luck's understanding that AR3 requests could not be filled in June 2020 when Good Luck was excluded from the ADD order?
No, Your Honor, it doesn't indicate that was our understanding. We thought they were going to end up with a 33. Based on the final results of litigation that we were engaged in. So we did not, and petitioners always have to decide how to spend their resources in these expensive cases. So no, it was not based on some understanding of good luck, you know, that we thought the law was as good luck has explained it. So Commerce never said in this or any other case that a Timken notice itself erases the statutory requirement that a request must be made to initiate a review request, or a review. There has to be such a request. We agree. There has to be the opportunity for that request, and good luck. You get one bite at the apple. Then all these cases say, we have to give you your bite at the apple. They have their bite at the apple here. Mr. Kahn wants to set this up like, you know, they're Schrodinger's cat, both dead and alive, until we look in the box. But a Timken notice doesn't make them dead, right? A Timken notice simply says, we're not going to liquidate, and something, a court has made a decision that might affect your rights.
So the Timken notice in this case, right,
mm-hmm.
You know, for AR3, does not expressly state that that Commerce would quote, not initiate any new AR3s during the provisional revocation period, end quote.
Correct.
And you've seen and heard the discussion we've had regarding the table that the plaintiffs have provided regarding Timken register in previous cases and Commerce practice. So do you have a view as to why Commerce in this case, or what merited the exclusion of the typical language regarding not initiating any review during the provisional revocation period?
Well, I don't know why Commerce didn't do it this time, except that it's not necessary for it to include that language. I think one can make the argument that those other cases in which they included that language are improper, that was a poor procedure, at least based on the understanding we have from the BMW case, that you have to publish this notice, parties can file a request. The fact that they won't initiate, that's step three. Under the Diamond Sawblades case, you do not, the Timken notice does not change the other statutory rights and obligations. It only affects whether there's going to be liquidation. Mm-hmm. I see my time is about to expire. I just have a couple more points to make, but I want to make sure that I answer any specific right. questions that the court has.
Right. I was interested in your view on the hypothetical. Assuming arguendo that Commerce erred in assessing that good luck's administrative review request remain due during the anniversary month that was provisionally excluded from the order, what is the result? Should this court order Commerce to now give good luck an opportunity to request AR3 review, or should this court remand back to Commerce for further explanation of its assessment that good luck's administrative review request remain due?
Well, our view of that was that the court shouldn't be able to get to that spot. Obviously, we didn't agree with the premise of the question. Everybody has a right to review, and our view is they already have that right and waived it in the month. Is it possible that somebody, you know, that because, as we put in our answer, yes, they no longer have a right, either because they waived it or because they appealed here, and the only reason that they lost the right was by their own action of appealing, and they have to rely on what happens here. And in terms of your honor's question to all the parties earlier, He would, I think, have to remand it back to Commerce for them to give further explanation, rather than simply order that a review be given. And Mr. Khan suggested that that review, I mean, that's the relief he's looking for, and eventually gets the opportunity to have a review. I'm not sure why that review would be under the court's jurisdiction. He would get his relief, and then if he doesn't like what he gets out of Commerce, he can appeal that. That's the normal course of things. I guess the final, if you're,
Doesn't have one final point. Right, and I'll give plaintiff a couple more minutes as well. Yeah.
So, in terms of what right to apply, assuming they didn't have a right to request a review, the entered rate at zero versus the 33% rate that the Federal Circuit set in the original investigation, we agree that those two are, you know, the review and the original investigation are separate. And that the regulation does say that it's the rate required at entry. But what you also have to weigh here is the proposition that the zero rate that was required at entry turned out to be not a valid rate. And I get it, they had subsequent reviews with lower numbers. That doesn't matter. The valid rate set by the Federal Circuit that should be given its due is the 33.7 rate. Logically, they got that rate. There was no AR1 completed, no AR2 completed. AR3 comes. The choice between a valid rate or an invalid rate, it should be the valid rate set by the Federal Circuit.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. So I will give the parties 4 minutes. Yeah. I will give the parties Mr. Marshak, I will actually give you 6 minutes, and the defendants collectively 2 minutes. For by way of rebuttal, since we you know, went over time for the defendant and intervener.
Thank you, Your Honor. This is Ned Marshak of Gwynfield Desiderio. Mr. Connelly, you know, wrote the brief, made our arguments, all the legal arguments. I just want to say something more personally about this. I was the one who made the decision not to ask Commerce about AR3 and not to file an AR3 review request. And if I had to do it again, I would do the same thing. And the reason is that Commerce has an absolute practice that when an order is partially revoked or fully revoked, they will not initiate an annual review during that period. For better or worse, we were involved in the Fufeng case. So that was our case too. We were involved in the ball bearing case. That was our case. And we were involved in the BMW case, which is part of the ball bearing litigation. And there's an absolute practice going back for 25 years. When you have a partial revocation of the review, the practice of Commerce is they will not initiate. Now,
and where is that absolute practice actually memorialized?
It's memorialized in our chart. We did the research, but we wrote the initial brief. We knew about Fufeng, we knew about ball bearings, but when Your Honor asked the questions, which really, you know, made us realize, you know, wait a second, there have to be more cases, not that many cases, because it's a very unusual situation where you have, because of CIT reverses the DOC, you have a revocation. So first you have to have the revocation, and that's happened, we found, in like 13 cases, so that's unusual. The second part of it is you have to have a revocation and a reversal. Now, when we originally wrote the briefs, we were focusing on the revocation and the reversal. We knew about ball bearings and we knew about Fufeng, again, because that's our client. But then we realized we should look more. We should look at the cases where you didn't have that reversal of the revocation. So we went back and we researched, we did our, you know, as complete a Westboro research as we could do. We found the revocation cases, and saw that in all the, and we found the 94 case, where you didn't have the magic language, but in 94, you had the full revocation, and then you had the reversal, but then they had the annual reviews after the reversal, because you have to give the party an opportunity, and you can't have an annual review when it's a partial or full revocation. And we found all the other cases, and in those other cases, it didn't have a reversal of the revocation, but you had that language in the Timken notice. As a result of the exclusion, Commerce will not initiate any new administrative review. Well, that language has been in all these Timken notices. And if that's not a practice, I don't know what a practice is. Every single one, for whatever reason, and we, you know, they didn't put that language in our notice. We have no idea why. But we know in two notices afterwards, they put the language in. So we're sitting out there as the perfect outlier. You have the practice before with the magic language, you have the practice after with the magic language, and with us, you don't have the magic language, which we didn't even realize didn't exist. Wasn't there. Now, the reason we didn't ask for a review was we saw the Timken notice. The Timken notice says that you are excluded from the order, merchandise produced and exported by Good Luck. That's excluded from the order. And that's Good Luck's way of doing business. Everything that Good Luck shipped to the United States was produced and exported by Good Luck. Anything else is not in the normal course of business. It doesn't, you know, as far as we know, it doesn't exist, or if it exists, it's illegal, because it's just not supposed to happen. So that's 100% of our merchandise. We're excluded. So POR2 comes along, and in POR2, you know, we say, we know we had entries before the Timken notice, so let's, you know, double check with Customs. Customs comes back on POR2, and it confirms our understanding of the law by absolutely expressly saying, we will not initiate AR2 as to Good Luck. When they said, and why won't they initiate AR2 as to Good Luck? Because merchandise produced and exported by Good Luck is excluded from the order. So when you get that in AR2, when AR3 comes up, you know, we're sitting, we're talking, well, should we, you know, file a review request? And we say, we can't file a review request. There's nothing to file. We're excluded from the order. You can't file a review request when you're excluded from the order, as the DOC said in AR2, as the DOC said in Food Fund, as the DOC said in Ball Bearings, and now we know, as the DOC said in every other case where this situation has come up in the past 30 years. So we believe there's an absolute practice. We believe failure to allow what the DOC did was an absolute deprivation of our due process rights. If they're going to make this dramatic change after years and years without telling us, hey, in your case, you should have filed a review request when every other case you were not allowed to file a review request because we weren't going to conduct a review. And just a year earlier in AR2, when we said something, they said, we're not going to initiate a review.
I mean, it seems that the government's position is that there's nothing that would have precluded you from filing a review request.
But
I mean, it would have been denied. Perhaps, but there was nothing that precluded you.
Yes. What could we say? Could we have filed? Could we always file a piece of paper with Commerce that gets absolutely rejected? Yeah, but we could not believe that Commerce would take a position that is so contrary to their practice, contrary to law, and contrary to due process. We shouldn't have to do that. And we can always, you know, could we, would we, should we? We believe Commerce is going to follow the law. I mean, you have a practice, you have the law. You know, again, we sat around and we said, we can't file a new request. They're not going to initiate. What reason? And we were dumbfounded when the decision came out. We just couldn't believe Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you. Sorry? I said two. We can make it three.
Okay.
Okay, three.
You should be fine.
Right. Right. And actually, this dialogue has reminded me that I wanted to ask why would in the Timken notice in this case, and this goes to I think what Mr. Marshak was and Mr. Kahn have also been saying. What is it about this case that merited the exclusion of the language that we've seen in all the other cases in the table that's been provided?
Okay. Let me address that question in the context of my rebuttal to what plaintiff just said. Now, their whole argument is claiming that Congress has this practice, but in their briefing, they admitted that other than Zantham Gum and Goodluck NR3, they are unaware of any case where an order was reinstated after partial revocation resulting from a CIT decision and a Timken notice. First of all, two cases are not a practice. They stated that they are unaware of any other case. Sure, they've come up with this table of other cases now, but none of those cases actually show, and there's nothing that Goodluck states, no evidence that it provides, that in those cases, what happened when Commerce reinitiated the review. And there's absolutely no practice that Commerce allows parties to request a review late. And Goodluck has even admitted that they can always file a request for a review. That's what this is all about. They can always file. Whether Commerce determines to initiate a review is a separate question. There was no dramatic change here. And I'm sorry, Your Honor,
So why is it that, with respect to Goodluck AR3, what is it about this case warranted or was the basis for the exclusion of the will not initiate any new ARs during provisional revocation period language?
That's right. I'm not sure, but I guess if we look at the facts of the case, Commerce could have initiated a review on Goodluck for AR3. So it wouldn't have included that language because there's no reason to, because it could have initiated a review had one been requested. Goodluck was not completely excluded. Some of its entries were in fact excluded, but the order still covered some of Goodluck's entries and other producers and exporters. The order was still in place.
So, I mean, why isn't it unreasonable for a party or such as the plaintiffs, as they were situated, to consider all of the cases and the practices that are set forth in the table on page 2 in the oral argument responses provided by the plaintiffs, and to conclude there's a practice here?
It's not unreasonable, but what that conclusion would lead to, looking at those cases, would be that where Commerce will not initiate reviews, it includes that language. Here there was, that language wasn't here, and even then, those cases don't show that a party requested a review, the order was revoked, and then when Commerce reinitiated the review, that those parties were not included, because that's not Commerce's practice. As Commerce's practice is what we've been stating all along, and it's absolutely not to initiate a review for an untimely request for a review. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. I take it, Mr. Liberta, you do not wish to say anything?
I didn't understand our side to have more time than
well, right. You shared the time. Okay, that's fine. Thank you. I want to thank counsel for a very interesting argument, very, very interesting case. And as is my practice, I will give the counsel the opportunity to file a post-argument submission of not more than 1,250 words. And it would be due next week, next Tuesday. August 8th, and actually for that we will make it due by 5 o'clock.
To be noted, Your Honor.
Yes, it is interesting that in a case involving deadlines and schedules that all sorts of issues present themselves. So. Without any. Further ado, I have to say it is great being, again, being back in the courtroom here. And be safe, be well, until the next time. Thank you.
All right. Court stands adjourned.